Testament prepares us for Jesus coming. He comes and new life begins. A new promise becomes available in this form of this baby. And then we know Jesus comes up out of Egypt. He threw the waters of his baptism into the desert. He's giving us a new exodus, a new covenant by which we live. And then he announces the kingdom. Last week we talked about the Sermon on the Mount, and he tells us what this kingdom is all about and how it's upside down from the kingdom of the world, that it's something new, and that you and I get to be a part of that kingdom coming to earth. As the prayer says, may your kingdom come, may your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven. And that is possible. But today we will discover who Jesus says he is. We know that he's fully human and that he walked through the desert and was tempted like all of us, but he also claimed to be fully God. And the scriptures back that up. And this is the bottom line today. Who you say Jesus is will determine how you live your life. Who you say Jesus is will determine how you live your life. And so we're gonna close in on who he says he is and how we respond to that. I was going to Starbucks the other day, and I like Starbucks. I work there. I like their coffee. I'll pay the premium price because it has double the caffeine. Did you know that? So I'm pulling up. I'm visiting a friend over by Gas City, and it's early in the morning, and I haven't had my coffee yet, so I'm really only able to speak out what I want to order. Other than that, I really didn't have words for it yet because I didn't have my coffee yet. So I pull up to get my coffee, and it's usually pretty quick, and she hands it out, and she says, the person in front of you just paid for you, for your coffee. And I know that that is an underground message that she is a Christian. I know that because that's what it's, I don't know, in the last 5 years, I think, that's become like a secret. If you get somebody to pay for it, it's a Christian ahead of you. Anyways, I said, I want to pass that on. So I said to the lady, I want to pay for persons behind me. And so she looked at me and she goes, good karma. I didn't have any words yet because I hadn't had my coffee. But for me, it was not good karma. It was because I know Jesus. And not that Jesus would go around buying other people's Starbucks if he was here today. But there is something about just randomly blessing somebody that I think his people are pretty good at. And so I got to thinking, this karma. Karma is do good, get good, do bad, get bad. And it's kind of permeated our culture in a lot of ways. But this Jesus flies in the face of that statement. And yet while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He came into our darkness and extends salvation and love that we don't deserve. And then his followers are empowered to do the same. It is quite the opposite of karma. And he, Jesus, and his followers brought far, far more. As we look throughout history, Jesus brought value to children. He says, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And from the time of Jesus on, we have valued children with a new value. Women. Women were some of his most devoted followers. And Jesus gave them a voice. A voice at which we still hear today, and that women have more value from the time that Jesus came till now. And we contribute that through history to his followers. The least of these. For if you've done this to the least of these than you've done to me. This rings true as we look at the disabled and the sick and the diseased and the poor. Hospitals and care centers have sprung up all over because his devoted followers said we give value even to the sick and the poor, even to the side of society that doesn't seem like they're going to make it. That's what the Sermon on the Mount really reinforced as well. Education has been preserved. Some of the finest educational institutions in our world have been founded by Jesus' followers. The list goes on. The list goes on. There's a Yale historian that said, if it were possible with some sort of super magnet to pull up out of history every scrap of metal bearing at least a trace of his name, how much would be left? If we think about our world and we take out all that Jesus has been a part of and has influenced in our world, it would be fairly significant. John Orberg writes in his book, Who Is This Man? He's talking about Jesus here. His vision of life continues to haunt and challenge humanity. His influence has swept over history, bringing inspiration to what has been done in art, science, government, medicine, education. He has taught humans about dignity, compassion, forgiveness, and hope. And there's a question that we need to ask ourselves today, and we need to really engage it, is who do you say Jesus is? Who do you really believe Jesus to be? Who is he? And if you feel like you've already answered this question, we need to answer it again. Because there's a lot in our culture right now that is picking apart the faith of his followers in pretty significant ways. We live in a culture that's like a melding, stirring pot of all kinds of philosophies and thoughts, and then we're just left to kind of pick out the good. But what it's done is it's eroded this question of who is Jesus and how do we respond? Because who you say Jesus is will determine how you live. Jesus spoke of a parable in the Sermon on the Mount, and it goes a little bit like this. If you build your house on Jesus' teachings and who he is, then you build your house on a rock. And when the storms come and the rains come down, that house stays put. It's strong. It's on a foundation that can't be taken away. But if you build your house on or your life on something different than Jesus' teachings, and you don't do what they say, then you're like the man who builds his house on the sand. And the sand washes away in the storm and the house collapses. We are in that right now more than ever. We are in that storm. Our culture is pressing hard. And so we have to know who Jesus is. I went to Israel a few years back. It was probably about 6 years from now. And this place was pretty cool and significant, and it spun my top really good. One of the places that went to was Caesarea Philippi, which is the scripture that Brandon read for us. And as I went to this place was very dark. As we heard the stories of what this place really is, Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" Some say that you're John the Baptist, the Elijah, Jeremiah, one of the prophets. And this place, Caesarea Philippi, I'm going to give you a picture of this place. This place was for many in that culture, both the Greek culture and the Roman culture. This was a worship center for idols, pagan gods, Baal, gods of fertility, Pan. This was the place where it all centered around. This is why. There was a spring that came out of the rock, and that is the spring of the Jordan River. If you go to this area in Jerusalem, or in Israel, you will know that water's a big deal there. It's a high commodity. When there's rain, people go up to the front of this river, and they just go to see the water, because it's that significant to them. But this is the beginnings of the Jordan River. And if you'll move to the next slide there, it's a place where they would put their god in one of those little cubbies, and they would name their god. They would say, this is the god of Pan, and this is why I worship him. And they would do some detestable act of prostitution, of sacrificing animals, sacrificing children. And they would claim their god. If you go to the next picture, this was kind of the spookiest piece of this, is that here in the beginnings of the Jordan River, there was the sinkhole. And this is where they would throw their sacrifices. And if they threw the sacrifices down in and it came out in the river below is red, then the gods were for them. If it came out clear, then they would know that they had to wait and do more to the gods. This was an eerie place. And this would have been all closed in by a big structure building. But they believed that down in that water and down in that cave, they would have believed that that's where the gods go during the winter. And they called this place the gate of hell. The gate of Hades is what this would have been called during the time of Jesus. And Jesus, in this area, in this region, which the region is small, he asked his disciples, who do they say the Son of Man is? And then he turns to them in this same area where people name their gods. And he looks at his disciples and he says, who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? And then Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And he says, blessed are you, Simon, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood. It wasn't revealed to you by your own mind or your own ability to think and know. This was revealed to you by my Father. And then he goes on to say, and he says, you, Peter, are going to build the church. On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. You see, Jesus is giving us a picture here. He's saying that we are going to build the church in the darkest places, in the most corrupt, detestable places. This is where the church goes. And the gates of hell will try to come against it. But my church will prevail. My church will last because of who I am. I am the King. I'm the Messiah. And he takes it in here. So we learn from Peter, and we learn from what Jesus says here, that Jesus is going to build his church, and that's who we are today. And to take it into the darkest places and offer hope and life and resurrection, which we're going to celebrate here in a few weeks, right? Resurrection, Easter. The scriptures all say that Jesus claimed to be God. What do you think? There are lots of people who left him when he started claiming who he was. Lots of the people who were following him, and the religious leaders of the day plotted to kill him and take him out. And so we're tempted here in our culture to say that Jesus was a good teacher. He was a good guy. I like him. He's a good example to follow. But it doesn't really cut it. It doesn't really cut it. And what Jesus says about himself makes it very clear that we have to decide who he is. Here's a quote from C.S. Lewis when he's talking about who Jesus is. I'm not trying here to prevent, I'm trying here to prevent anyone from saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That is the one thing we must not say. A man who is merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says that he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool. You can spit at him. You can kill him as a demon. Or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about him being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us, and he did not intend to. You see, Jesus was either a liar or a lunatic, or he was Lord. Let's look through the scriptures to see who he said he was. And you can't deny it. And I would ask, as you hear these, that you would be thinking to yourself, who do I say Jesus is? He forces us to make a choice about who he is. And the Pharisees in John 8, they were angry and wanted to kill him. This is what they came to the conclusion of. They exclaimed in verse 52, "Now we know that you are demon-possessed." This is what the religious leaders of the day said about Jesus. "We think that you're demon-possessed." And he goes on to say, Jesus replied, "I glorify myself. My glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. And though you do not know him, I know him. And if I said I didn't, I would be a liar like you." So here he's addressing this idea of being a liar. "Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day, and he saw it and was glad." And they said, "You're not even 50 years old. How do you know anything about Abraham?" And he says, "Very truly, I tell you," Jesus answered, "before Abraham was born, I am." He uses a distinct phrase from the Old Testament. "I am" belongs to God. God is the great I am. And he says, "I am." And at this, they picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus slipped away. You see, they were ready to kill him. We can't take that and just say, "Well, yeah, he's a good guy. You know, choose some things that Jesus says." These religious leaders were ready to kill him. And it was blasphemy what he said, and eventually led him to the cross. Let's look forward in the rich young ruler. He says, "Good teacher, good teacher." And Jesus responds with this: "No one is good except God." No one is good except God. So how am I a good teacher? He said to the guy, well, the guy asked him, how do I get into heaven? How do I belong to the kingdom? And he lays out the Ten Commandments. He says, I've done all those. And this is what he says. He says, "If you want to be perfect, go and sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come and follow me." You see, that man had something in his heart right here that he worshiped, that he served. He served his wealth. And so when Jesus came along and said, "Hey, I know you've served all the Ten Commandments. They point to me. And so I'm speaking to the thing in your life that you worship and serve. And I'm asking you to cut that out and put me there instead." And the man walks away sad. He says, "You can't do it. Can't do it." But Jesus says, "Come and follow me." Lazarus. Lazarus is another event that happened. And Lazarus's friend had died, and they put him in a grave, and he didn't come home, even though he knew about Lazarus's death. And finally, he gets there, and he talks to Mary and Martha. And Martha says, "Yes, Lord." And she was asking the same, who is this man? Martha says, "Yes, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." And they said that Lazarus had been in the grave for 4 days. The Jews would have known that 3 days was the place where the soul left the body. That was their theology, that somebody could be in the grave for 3 days and their soul was still with him. So just to be sure, he was there 4 days in the grave, dead as dead could be. And this is what Jesus says. So they took the stone, and Jesus looked up to the Father. He says, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and that I knew you always hear me. And I said this for the benefit standing here, that they may believe that you have sent me." And then he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." Now, if this was a lunatic or a liar, there wouldn't have been a dead Lazarus that came out alive. He says, "Take off the grave clothes, set him free." Jesus proved that he had the power of God, and he did it in his name. Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry. This would have been the same way that David would have come down into the city, proclaiming that he is king. Jesus does the same thing, but not on a war horse, but on a donkey, a symbol of peace. He is coming in proclaiming to be king, the coming Messiah, to fulfill prophecies. Did you know that there are over 350 prophecies that are fulfilled in the life of Jesus from the Old Testament? The Old Testament prepares us for the way of Jesus, right? We've been through this. We've walked through it. He prepares us. 350 prophecies. So let us come back to Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus asked the question, "Who do you say I am?" You have to answer this question, because he makes a big difference in what you do with him and how you live your life. Whether you accept him or reject him, what you do with sin and death, how you make decisions, what you worship, because you will worship something. What you serve, you will serve something. It doesn't matter what religion background you come from or what belief system, you will serve something. If Jesus is who he says he is, then it is worth it to take out what you serve and worship and replace it with him. Jesus as Lord. If he is the creator of all creation, the creator of you and me, and if he knows that he designed you for a purpose, and that purpose is his, who do you say he is? Romans 10:9 says this: "If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved." If you declare with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. That is a promise from the scriptures. That is building your house upon the rock. And I promise you that it will transform your heart. That's another reason why we know that he is not a lunatic, because his power and influence and life in his people have transformed most people in this room. Like this picture, transformation. Transformation from something to something beautiful. He's created new life in you. He's filled you with his spirit. And from the inside out, we are changed. And from the inside out, that kingdom comes alive. that Jesus Christ came to announce. And so say this with me. Say this verse with me. If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. There's something powerful about what we say. Even when we sing, our body and soul, when we use our body to speak of something that's happening in our soul grows. And there's life that comes out of it. And so when you speak, you're speaking from something deep down within yourself. The same place that Jesus says that he will transfigure. And I close with this. They're at the Transfiguration, which is right down the road from Caesarea Philippi. It's Mount Hermon. It's a huge mountain. It's just sky. It's huge. You can see it from all over. And they go up on this mountain. He takes some disciples, three of them, and Jesus is transfigured. Must have been a beautiful sight. Bright light. There with him are prophets from the Old Testament. And God says, this is my beloved son, whom I love. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to him. If we say Jesus is Lord, we have to receive all of him. Not just parts we like. It's all of him. And he's got to take over that place in our hearts where we say, you're my Lord. The Father audibly announced that Jesus is this man. Jesus is the one to be listened to. Listen to the way he lived. Listen to the truths he proclaimed. Listen to the life he offers. That moment on the mount was filled with divine, and the moment was full, and it did not need a building project. What it was needed was to listen and notice that God in Jesus was very present. Often the deepest listening occurs in the absence of words. So we're just going to take 30 seconds of silence. And I want you, while you're asking this question of who do I say Jesus is? Is he a liar, a lunatic, or is he Lord? I also want you to listen. Listen for his voice. That he may be speaking something to you. Allow him to speak that. We sit with open hearts. As Brian comes up to close our worship service, I want to just declare this to you, that as for me and my house, as for the leadership of this church and who this church is, I claim Lord Jesus Christ as the Messiah and the Savior, as the Son of God, fully capable of rescuing, fully capable of bringing new life where there is once death, fully capable of entering in wherever you're at and bringing transformation, bringing the kingdom. And as for us in our church, we will proclaim that. We will proclaim that Jesus is Lord. No question about it. No matter how hard culture presses against us, because it's a conviction. And we will live our lives for Him. And when we do that, there's something amazing that happens, is that our soul, like the psalmist says, is restored. Mm. And it becomes well with our soul, even though circumstances in life aren't. But there's a constant here the Lord brings us.
When peace like a river, sing it, attendeth my way. When sorrow like sea.